First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
The city scrambles to fix that most basic of government services, trash pickup. Duval Schools continues to do battle with the state over COVID safety rules for kids. And the Jaguars lose again. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Listen on the radio or watch the live stream right now on Facebook and YouTube. It's also on demand at PBS Jax Passport. Then later, learn how you can drive electric this weekend and test drive some cool vehicles. It's all at JEA's big drive electric event at the Mosh. That's later on. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we've got an all-star panel. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics is here. A.G., good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Writer Shelton Hull with us. Good morning, Shelton.
Good morning.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you guys as we discuss a busy week in the news on this first day of October. Just a hint of fall is in the air. And everybody out there, join us as we will go to your calls in a moment. It's our Friday roundtable, 549-2937. We begin with our top story. The city is taking millions of dollars from the American Rescue Plan to fix trash pickup around town. Now, you may have heard a little bit about this lately. Taxpayers across Duval County are steaming mad that their garbage is just sitting by the curb and not being picked up. The city earlier this week said they were going to pause recycling service beginning next Monday because of vast labor shortages that we're suffering under in this pandemic. And so as we begin the hour, we're going to take a closer look at this. What are your concerns about your trash not being picked up? What are your thoughts about the city's plan for this? Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax. Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times Union, let's begin with you. Beginning today, the trash hauler is set to take over routes formerly serviced by Republic Services at a higher rate after the city approved a spending plan allocating $4 million for emergency fixes for trash collection and another $4.5 million toward the city's new contract with a company called Meridian Waste Florida. Can this fix the problem? Can the city actually pick up the trash? That is the question that confronts us.
Well, the big question is the yard waste that is sitting on curbs in front of our house, for example, for the past 3 weeks. The mayor, when he attended the groundbreaking a week and a half ago on the new E-Town fire station, brought us all over and said, hey, guys, you know, we're thinking about stopping recycling so we can get more manpower out there. We'll make it maybe official. And sure enough, on Monday, he made it official. And now you've got 14 drop-off locations set to start on Monday at area parks. So you can bring your recycling there and not stick it in your trash. Meanwhile, here we hopefully will see the trash, the yard waste disappear within a week or so if these people get on the ball.
Yeah, let's hope so. Now, at the same time, the city says it's going to pause recycling pickup because they have to prioritize trash and yard waste pickup. That is angering people who are paying for this service. Now, there's a labor shortage driving all this. There just aren't enough people willing to work to pick up the trash. The mayor this week in a news conference said some of these contracted waste haulers make up to $60,000 a year. That's true for some. However, a garbage collector called into this show the other day, and he said many make far less than that and work long hours at low pay. Let's listen to Chris.
We're the ones come pick it up by hand, and we haul that stuff off, you know what I'm saying? And for a long time, I never heard anything about the garbage guys getting any recognition. You know, nobody thinks of us. You know, we put our stuff out. Most of us rarely know our garbage guy. We don't even know what they look like. We just put our stuff out. We go to work. We come back, and that can is going to be empty.
Okay, A.G. Gankarski, you know, these guys work really hard, and there just aren't enough people willing to do this job at the salary that's being offered. They're taking jobs maybe at an Amazon warehouse or somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, garbage collection is a disgusting job. I mean, everybody knows what goes into the garbage. Everybody knows what people try to get away with putting into the garbage and so on. And these guys handle it from sun up to sundown in many cases, and it's brutal. This points to a larger labor market inefficiency. I mean, we see this with a lot of so-called blue-collar jobs. People don't want to do them. They know the compensation isn't enough. They know they've been exposed to great hazard during the pandemic era, and they know the economy is changing. The dollar is worth less and less all the time. And people realize that it's kind of like what they say about the Ford Pinto. It's unsafe at any speed. And that's kind of what they realize about garbage collection. You know, they don't want to do this job in many cases. And the city's response to stop recycling, that's something they wanted to do for a long time anyway. You go back 5 years, they were talking about it in the meetings. You go back a few years, and they were planting stories in the media to help people who are abusing the recycling process. You go to that press conference that Mayor Lenny Curry did, and he's talking about how people aren't recycling properly and so on and so on. And, you know, I get it. I understand. But, you know, it's kind of hilarious to say, hey, let's bring in Four Seasons here in one breath, and the next breath say, hey, we're not going to do recycling. Let's pretend like it's 1985.
Wow. Shelton Hull, you know, this is the most basic thing the government does. Things like picking up the trash, you know, paving the roads. These are the things that people rely on local government to do competently. Now, as AG mentioned, there have been problems with the recycling program for a long time. Not everybody recycles correctly. If you want to recycle your trash, you can still go to one of 14 drop-off sites around town. We have those locations posted on our website at wjct.org. All of that said, though, Shelton Hull, the city is suspending curbside recycling starting Monday. That is not going down well with the thousands of residents out there that do make an effort to separate out their recyclables, put them in the yellow-topped bins. They are upset that all of this is now just going to go to the landfill.
Well, sucks for them. It doesn't really matter what they think. You know, as with so many aspects of governance during this pandemic, the pandemic has exposed aspects of our society that are not financially sustainable. And this is another one of those things. We've kind of played it fast and loose with recycling for many years. It's kind of a conservative town, and people have loved to talk about how recycling isn't cost effective, how people abuse it, how we're not actually recycling all the things that we recycle. And, you know, the current situation just kind of feeds into the narrative that always existed, that, you know, not everyone was on board with this. And as far as the solid waste pickup, you know, a big portion of America's solid waste is food waste. Recycling and composting should be mandatory nationwide. You know, the same people that are so upset because the trash piles up on their curb for a couple of days, I wish they showed the same urgency about the wholesale destruction of our natural environment. But they're mad about some mulch that's stacking up. It's, I understand their concern, but those concerns are minor compared to the larger issues that this city and this country are facing. So, you know, something had to break, and that's what broke.
Yeah, Dan Scanlon, you know, and it's just human nature being what it is. Until something is right in front of your face, you don't really confront some of the systemic problems we're dealing with in this country right now that all of you have touched on. The economic pain points that are driving these labor shortages. Until you don't see trash being picked up on your block, you're not maybe paying a lot of attention, right?
Correct. And, you know, I can remember in New York City when the sanitation workers went on strike and there was garbage stacked two stories tall next to some midtown buildings. You don't realize what you've got until it's gone. And now, obviously, people have the yard waste stacked in front of their house. point where my lawn still has a patch on it from the last time they didn't pick it up until they hired a private contractor to pick it up on a Sunday morning. So it's nasty out there, and we're not the only one. St. Augustine just announced that they will not accept glass anymore in recycling. According to a city release yesterday, they said people should not put the glass in, and that's all kinds of glass. Just throw it away in your garbage.
Right. A.G. Gankarski, we need to note the beaches communities have made a point of letting us know Jacksonville Beach, Atlantic Beach, and Neptune Beach are still moving right along with their recycling pickup. The mayor of Jacksonville Beach went so far as to email us the other day when we were talking about this on the air to make sure that we got that information out to the community. They are smaller communities, but they have managed to find a way to keep this service going.
Boy, the beaches love to grade themselves on the curve, don't they? Consolidation with exceptions, I mean, is classic case here. I mean, you know, Jacksonville bears legacy costs for decades and decades of being established. I mean, everything we look at, you know, you can see pension costs and whatever else, crowding and infrastructure costs. So, I mean, the beaches, it's not a direct comparison. I love the Ocean County propaganda, but let's leave it at the water's edge.
Tim Gibbons, Jacksonville Business Journal. From a business perspective, you know, this is, let's talk about this from the mindset of the average taxpayer. They're paying for a service, they're not getting the service. The onus is now on city officials to fix this pronto.
Right, and it's always been a thing in Jacksonville. We don't want to raise taxes, so we tack on fees. And particularly when a fee is a very direct payment for service, and the idea that the money that you are paying, you're trying to hire a service. We talked the other day about the issues in the supply chain, and this is akin to that. It's the issue that we're in a new reality, and it would obviously, most people would far prefer to work as an Amazon driver than a garbage truck driver. And the city just has to adjust to that reality and, make the proper decisions.
549-2937. It's our Friday Media Roundtable with Tim Gibbons, Shelton Hull, A.G. Gankarski, Dan Scanlon, and yours truly. We are live on the radio. You can also watch our video stream right now on Facebook and YouTube. What are your thoughts about the great trash pickup debacle that is plaguing this city and many others we need to point out right now? 549-2937. Rick on the South Side. Hi, Rick. Rick, go ahead and turn your radio down and go right ahead. You're on the air. All right, Rick. We'll give you another 10 seconds. Go on, Rick.
Yes, good morning, Miss Melissa. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Go right ahead.
Yes, I was just calling the problem.
Come on, Rick.
The problem that when I talk to some of these guys, Miss Melissa, the problem is we only have one trash landfill, and that's the problem. We need another trash landfill in Jacksonville, and that's my comment.
Thank you, Rick. Dan Scanlon, he's right. The Trail Ridge Landfill on the far west side is the place where all of our trash is going now. None of it is getting recycled. We're told that trash collectors are sometimes driving all the way across the city to drop waste off, then returning to their routes. Is this an efficient system?
You know, you don't want to dump a landfill, in your backyard. We had one in Mandarin ages ago, which is now being brownfielded and developed around. It's a long haul. Anyone who's had to go out to 301 to that landfill for any reason knows that it can be an hour round trip, and that's in a car, not in a very fuel inefficient, paid by the hour garbage truck. It's a nasty job, and then you got to live with it on the round trip, dump it, and come back for more.
Mark in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering on this the company that the city hired to begin collecting waste in Jacksonville, does the contract require them to hire the employees of the old company that were reporting to work and were doing a good job, or are they going to be unemployed?
You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that. Shelton Hull, what we do know is that they've allocated more than $8 million to not only fix the immediate problem, but also toward a new contract with the company Meridian Waste Florida. Beginning today, Shelton, they're supposed to take over the routes formerly serviced by the company Republic Services. The mayor's office says they're swapping out contractors because Republic didn't want to extend its contract. So it looks like a whole new set of workers.
Yeah, and it's a little weird, but the good news is there's a Sopranos movie coming out, and that has nothing to do with each other. Certainly, if the mafia was running waste collection, the city might actually
get done on
time and on budget.
You mean like they do in New Jersey? Okay.
Allegedly.
I mean,
it's one of those things. I mean, classic Jacksonville. We're going to spend this money to maybe achieve this goal. I bet you $1 that says the money we're spending is not going to be enough, and we'll have to come back around, spend more money, and that still won't be enough, and we'll come back around and spend more money. You know, at the end of the day, people will still make a profit. There's money to be made in all this, and people will continue to make money. The folks that are upset about the trash being picked up, you know, like, I mean, sorry. I mean, it's one of those, this is just one of those things. We got nothing for you. You're just going to have to sit there and deal with it.
549-2937. Jessica is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Jessica.
Good morning, Melissa. I saw some great reporting from Nate Monroe on how city council members voted to award their own nonprofit hundreds of thousands of dollars, also from the same pot of money, the ARP. And I'm wondering, does that take money away from what could have been used for waste services?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that actually tees up our next point of discussion here on the show. The city council did vote Tuesday to approve the mayor's $1.41 billion budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Lots of money going to police and fire and the city's capital improvement plan. They're getting more than $140 million from the Federal American Rescue Plan. They're going to use some of that to get rid of old septic tanks, resurface roads, on and on and on. But the budget vote was not without controversy. As Jessica, the caller, pointed out, in the dead of night Tuesday, with nobody really watching because it was so late at night, the council voted to approve about $500,000 to a nonprofit with a sketchy history run by council member Reggie Gaffney. They also approved funding requests for three other council members who run local nonprofits, Jacoby Pittman, Terrence Freeman, and Kevin Carrico, all on the city council, all received funding from their fellow council members for their organizations. Nobody had to compete for these grants, which is what is normally required. The council waived the rules for their colleagues. They got the money after 11 o'clock at night. No questions, no vetting asked, no comment period. Dan Scanlon, let's talk about this. This is theoretically within the letter of the law, but it has left a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of taxpayers and constituents out there who see it as an egregious example of council members engaging in self-dealing and their colleagues allowing it to happen.
Well, as our Nate Monroe pointed out very distinctly, that last minute request was for a nonprofit with what he called a spotty history run by one of its own members, Reggie Gaffney. Note, there may not be any disputing that there's pandemic related economic harm, but that came after three other funding requests for $100,000 each for other nonprofits run by other council members, including Pittman, Freeman, and Carrico. So you do it at 11 o'clock. Most folks have gone home because the big ticket items that they wanted to gripe about are done. And now you get this done. And again, it may be within the law, but as you said, like the garbage that isn't getting picked up, it does have a little stink to it.
Right. A.G. Gankarski, you know, people who work at other nonprofits or head them up and have to compete for these grants, they're pretty angry.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, the history in the city the last decade and a half has been, you know, the cutting of public service grants and related things. Nonprofits, you know, struggle year to year, and there's pandemic-related harm to all of them. But the way the council structures its meetings basically makes sure that nobody sees the stuff happening. You know, they have a very vivid public comment very early in the meeting, and you have the guy with the Confederate flag and this and that and the other, and that's like 90 minutes of people just giving, you know, hot quotes. And, you know, then they have a bunch of zoning, of course, so by the time you get things involving actual money, it's 8:30. You know, they did the budget vote, and somehow they all got to yes on that except for one person. But when it got down to these bills where they appropriated nonprofits money, nobody said anything. You know, nobody asked about the stuff. It was all taken as a given. And that illustrates the insider game in Jacksonville very well. Republican or Democrat, if you're inside the tent, you're inside the tent. And when we look at campaigns in 2022, 2023, we have to look at it that way. You know, someone like Reggie Gaffney can get $500,000 off the city payroll because he figured out how to work the levers. And it's true for all these guys. And, you know, if they have campaigns again, they should have to answer these questions. But, you know, this is basically going to be forgotten about next week. Rory Diamond's got a bill after the fact basically saying that there's got to be a process, et cetera. We'll see where that bill goes in this council. We know that everybody on the council is ranked for something else now anyway. So, you know, what does it matter?
That, you know, Tim Gibbons, I think AG expresses the cynicism all of us who cover local and state government routinely feel. The voters don't really pay attention to this stuff. We in the surviving local news outlets do our best to keep government in the sunshine so that people are informed. But this is simply not good governance. It's just not.
Well, no, we haven't had a good scandal since JEA. So, you know, I guess, you know, kudos to City Council for trying to do something to get those big headlines back in the news. We were reporting on this back in May 2020 when the first round of relief funds came out, and the city set aside a pot of money for basically organizations that work with the city. And it was Reggie Gaffney's nonprofit applied for funds at that point too. I think they've gotten $1 million or something like that over the course of the pandemic. I don't think anybody is necessarily arguing that, I mean, no, nobody is arguing that nonprofits should not get the money, but there is this, as Dan said, there's the smell test. And I think it is the type of thing that breeds cynicism where do it as an above board thing, do it as an application, have other nonprofits, because there are many nonprofits in this community who are struggling, make it an open thing where they can apply. That would at least dampen the idea that this feels like a giveaway.
Yeah, and Shelton Hull, someone else made a comment too that so many of these members are already gearing up to run for higher office. They've already received the backing of donors who largely control this process. And it's a pretty small number of donors, by the way. And so people are under the illusion that they have access to government, that they have a say in what goes on with our local government. But until the taxpayers revolt in a major way, like they did over the JEA scandal or they did over the Lot J proposal, most of this stuff goes on under cover of night with little oversight. We in the local media can try to shine a light on it as best we can, but unless it becomes a campaign issue and people challenging this state of affairs run for office in greater numbers, it's going to continue.
Yeah, and it's always been this way, and it will always be that way. I mean, the sad reality is the campaign finance system is basically legalized money laundering, and the same applies to a lot of nonprofits around this country, not necessarily here, but we've seen these scandals before, misappropriations of funds and, you know, campaign donations being made. That's a fairly regular thing. The financial situation as far as nonprofit giving was dire. It's been dire for a couple of years, even prior to the pandemic. You look at this community, people mean well, but we have a lot of redundancy, and we have a lot of waste and mismanagement among the nonprofit community. And stories like this, you know, really give fuel to the cynics out there who kind of say, well, you know, the issue isn't that we're giving this money to that nonprofit, that money to that nonprofit. Some people would say, why are we spending taxpayer dollars, you know, giving this money to these organizations at all? And of course, I think we should be doing that. But, you know, you take note of these organizations that Nate reported on right now that are getting this money. I'm sure they're lovely people, but give it 6 months to a year, we'll have some type of scandal. I'm sure somebody's already said something ridiculous on a phone call that's been taped. I'm sure someone's already sent the wrong email to the wrong person, and we'll see how that plays out.
Jessica tweets the show, thank you for reporting and covering the misuse of funds by the city council as they award their own nonprofits hundreds of thousands of dollars with no competition while the city struggles to fund basic services. I forget who's next in the queue. Tim Gibbons, I think that's rubbing salt in the wound that this news broke just as the city collectively realized their trash is not going to get picked up. But yet the city council can award themselves money for their own businesses. That it's the perception that priorities are not in order and that government is not doing its job.
Right. And that oftentimes is the issue. I remember when the large scoreboards at the stadium were put up, and it was right around the time where there was another one of the periodic spikes in the murder rate. And a lot of the conversation then was, is there a way of using the funds that are going into the stadium to, you know, do community redevelopment and do things that make the city safer and better? Yeah, I mean, the reality is that one of the reasons that nonprofits are needed to do many of these services is because the city is not otherwise funding it. So there's a disconnect, I think, sometimes between what people want the city to do and what the city is willing to pay for.
We continue to get calls about the trash pickup situation. Let's go to a few of those. Let us know your thoughts, everyone. 549-2937. And you can watch our video stream right now on Facebook and YouTube. Linda in Mandarin. Hi, Linda. Good morning.
Good morning. It wasn't until all this happened that I found out. I think we need an overall, and Nate does a great job, a new guy magnifying it, but we need a full-time city corruption reporter. I have a friend of a friend that I just learned that worked for the waste management company that had the contract for years, and it found out that he had already been released. Now, we have a work shortage. He'd been released, and he went up to South Carolina to take a job in waste management. Now, they're saying, and this is word on the street, so there's no confirmation, he said that they were told that they lost a bid by somebody who underbid them who didn't have trucks or workers, but that they lost their job, and he'd been doing that over a decade, and they didn't have any outreach that they were going to get a job with a new company. So he was out of work for the first time ever, and he went to another state to get a job in waste management. So between that and then city council on top of that, the corruption, I come from a small town in South Carolina, this Sparta, Mississippi 2.0. So corruption in a small town is very acceptable and vagrant because they think only a few people have enough, you know, smarts to run the city. But in a place like Jacksonville with multi-billion dollar budgets, if we need somebody to peel away, we could probably find a sub-level of corruption in the way contracts are awarded and the way they're self-dealing and the way they're having these non-sunshine meetings all the time. It's very galling. And I want a refund of my impact fee. We're paying it on our taxes. They won't give us a refund, but they want to cut our service. That's not very Republican. I just want you to know.
All right, Linda. Guys. Thank you. You mentioned that we need a full-time journalistic enterprise focusing on local government. Let me direct everyone once again to jacksonville.com. WJCT.org. We also have represented here on the show Florida Politics and the Jacksonville Business Journal. And so there are people, Dan Scanlon, there are journalists working every day to inform the public about what our government and our representatives are doing. But you can hear the frustration out there from voters who feel that not enough people are being made aware of this.
And it all depends on what outlets you're looking at, how much you read it. If you still get the Times Union on your doorstep, which I do, and actually have the time to read it, or if you get a good news alert from WJCT or Jacksonville.com that keeps you up to date, you just may not have the time with everything else happening in the city to look at every nook and cranny. But yeah, Nate and the rest of us, we have City Hall reporters. We have me covering police. We are always out there looking, hunting, asking questions on social media. What do you want to tell us? And you want to talk about roads? I do a weekly column on roads, and all I get is complaints every week. And meanwhile, I'm driving on the most potholes I've ever seen, right in front of my house, in fact, as well as all over the city.
Kendra in Mandarin. Hi, Kendra. Good morning.
Good Good morning, Melissa. I just, you know, I'm curious about the waste collection. Of course, I'm a taxpayer, much like yourself and our neighbors. And I'd like a little bit more of an explanation. I'm wondering, since Mayor Curry's message was that the reason to discontinue the recycling collection is because there are not enough workers to fill these roles. So if that really is the case, why not have a city job fair where they can hire on the spot and within 2 or 3 days, problem solved? And that would be something for him to be able to brag about, job creation and filling jobs. My other question is, if that's really not the main reason, has there been mismanagement of the budget? And if there has, whether there has or has not been mismanagement, have we ever had a city audit where the results are available to regular citizens like myself? Thank you.
Thank you. These documents are public. We do have a council auditor's office. The city does do job fairs too, Kendra, by the way, and they have in the past. AG Gankarski.
Yeah, so it's ironic. I can't help but laugh because when Curry got elected, he said he's going to have a 90-day audit on the city because Alvin Brown's mismanagement. So, you know, it comes full circle. No, the city budget is a pretty clean, transparent process. It happens over months and months. You know, there are organizational meetings, there are city council meetings. They do it all through the August finance meeting. So, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to dialogue with the process there. You need to have time to do it. But, you know, the problem with this particular budget, you know, it goes back to what is the money really worth? You got $495 million going into the capital improvement plan, for example. And, you know, you kind of wonder if some of that money should have been shifted into operations, knowing what we know now. If you've got labor shortage issues, you got to pay your people. You know, so you kind of want to look at that. But, you know, in terms of budgeting, I mean, this is the golden age because Joe Biden is printing money like it's going out of style, and the beneficiaries are governments. I mean, you see it with Ron DeSantis in Florida. You know, DeSantis has basically said we've got more money than we can spend. And, you know, he's done things like civics bonuses for teachers with the money and things like that that, you know, don't really comport with COVID relief, but who's really watching at this point?
Yeah, I mean,
there's no such thing as fiscal conservatism anymore.
The city's getting over $100 million from the federal rescue plan, as we saw in the budget approval Tuesday night. It will go towards some needed problems that we do need to work on in this town. It's not wasteful. That said, let's get to a few more calls. Angela on the north side. Angela, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling in. I received my 501c3 this year. I am starting a nonprofit, Pathway Seekers, to help women coming out of incarceration. And it's very disheartening to hear how the city council is funding themselves, the city council members, for their nonprofits. Just knowing my preliminary numbers that I would need about $4 million to get this nonprofit up to help these women, it's just very disheartening. Like, how would I even compete when you have board members that are funding their own nonprofits?
Thanks, Angela, and I'm really sorry to hear that. Tim Gibbons, let's call out these city council members once again. Reggie Gaffney, Jacoby Pittman, Terrence Freeman, and Kevin Carrico. A bipartisan list of council members who use their connections with their colleagues on the city council to receive grant money for the nonprofits they run without any kind of competitive bidding process.
There's also the issue that some of these nonprofits have you know, have their own issues that if you have other nonprofits, I'm sure in your listening audience who, you know how hard it is to run a nonprofit organization and do good for the community and do it in a way that can withstand scrutiny and is transparent and above board.
Yeah, and not to cut you off, Claire White Mission, run by Jacoby Pittman, has been going through a host of problems.
Their entire board resigned.
The whole board resigned. Reggie Gaffney's nonprofit has a sketchy history, and yet the council saw fit to award these entities more money without any kind of vetting or competitive bidding.
Right. And it's those two bits where you can be a nonprofit who can say, if anybody's going to get it, it shouldn't be nonprofits that are going through this type of turmoil. And if you're going to give out city money, there's a reason you have the procurement code. There's a reason why things go out to bid, because that gives people a certain feeling of, well, you know, at least everybody got a fair shot versus, well, somebody got elected. I think part of the problem, we talked about the media and the need for scrutiny here. The other thing is voters need to take action. If this is something that bothers you, if you're concerned about waste pickup, if you're concerned about city council members, you know, funding their own nonprofits, the ballot box is the way to deal with that.
Mark calling from the Dames Point Bridge. Hello, Mark. You still there?
Hey, Melissa. Good Friday to you.
You too.
Yeah, I kind of agree with AG that we got to reappropriate some of these funds, but the city is estimated to take in what this year? Almost $1 billion in property taxes alone. We haven't heard anything about the police and firefighters pension fund shortages and stuff, because that's pretty much fixed. We're paying down our municipal debt at a rate that any household would be proud of. The money's there. I seriously think with the recycling thing, I don't know if you heard it this week, but they also slipped in, they're not going to recycle glass anymore, period, because it's not economically viable. But we don't recycle to be economically viable. We recycle to keep stuff out of the landfill. And if we're paying fees for it, I think there's something else going on here with that. But anyway, y'all have a good weekend.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, you know, AG, as we talk about the self-dealing on the city council, I continue to get a lot of tweets and emails about the recycling issue. Not to take our eye off the ball on that issue. That is one of the only ways the average person has at their disposal to, you know, try to do their part for the planet. And people do a lot of wish cycling, as it's called. They put stuff in that doesn't get recycled, and then that contaminates the whole lot. So that's a legitimate problem. But the fact that we don't have it available at all now, unless you're willing to drive to a drop-off point, it feels as though the city's going backwards. Let's hope that they can get it restored at some point.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could debate, you know, the utility in terms of, you know, how much use does recycling have. But one thing we can't debate is the programming of people. You know, Earth Day is every day. They said that 30 years ago, that as they kicked off the recycling. And you get the blue bins, and it's all, like, you know, drummed in your head, and then you're told that it doesn't matter. And there's kind of this postmodern nihilism to the recycling messaging that we're getting these days. And, you know, it's of a piece with everything else. I mean, we have a nihilism throughout our culture. You know, the debate that's going on 2 years on whether to wear a mask or not inside a public place with the pandemic going on. You know, we see a debased public discourse. And ironically, the recycling issue indicates that, but also for people, it hits people where they live, literally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing with it. You know, it's like Hazura used to say, there are no Republican or Democratic potholes. You know, same is true for garbage collection. If you see your garbage uncollected, you're looking at politicians. You don't care if they're Republican, Democrat, if they're MAGA, if they're, you know, squad, whatever. If they're not doing their jobs, they're not doing their jobs. And that's how it looks right now to a lot of people at home.
Chris in Springfield. Hi, Chris. How are you? Go ahead. Chris, go ahead.
Having me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. Great morning. Thanks for having me. We've moved here about 3 months, and one of the most striking things up front was how there's seemingly no limit on how much garbage people can put out each week to get collected. And we drive around constantly and see mattresses, tires, et cetera. I know typically appliances and furniture are supposed to go on certain days, but then it just sits for weeks, and there's no real restriction that curbs people from putting out more. You know, in other cities, they'll charge per bag if you go over a certain limit, or you actually have to go to the dump. I've seen entire people move and put their whole shipment of boxes outside for collection, and that's a manpower thing. That's not really a money thing, so you can't just throw money at the problem. I think reducing the footprint of how much people are putting out in trash is priority number one. Sure, we'd like higher wages for the workers, but, you know, we got to start somewhere with the overall workload. And then also, you know, it would be great to continue on recycling, but, you know, not many elected officials and government personnel are going to lose a ton of money recycling when we have bigger issues of sanitation just for our yard and waste collection. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Nick on the north side. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
I want to talk about recycle.
Yep, go ahead.
New York has a great plan. If you don't recycle quickly, you get a penalty, Alice, like a ticket, and you pay a fine. There should be something in Jacksonville just like that, where you're responsible for your recycle, and that's it. Where's all the money going that we're putting into this?
You know what
makes sense to me? Like, even like the fire department, when they send an ambulance, they send five guys in two trucks. Or the police, they drive their cars home, and let's be honest, they don't live in Duval, they live in Middleburg and everywhere else. We're paying that gas bill. There's so much waste in local government, and no one's accountable. The mayor should do his job.
Well, Nick, the mayor has tried, to be fair to the mayor and the city, they are not the only city dealing with this problem. They have tried, they are announcing they're trying to fix the problem with a new waste management contract. But I hear your frustration, Nick, and I thank you for your call. Okay, guys, we do need to talk about a few other news and notes from the week. This week, the Duval County Public School Board authorized the district's legal team to sue the Florida Department of Health. Now, Shelton, this is over an emergency rule that requires school districts to allow parents to opt their kids out of mask mandates and quarantine requirements. Duval County, Shelton, is joining other districts around the state in continuing to defy the Florida Department of Health and the Board of Education. These are state entities trying to dictate pandemic response in schools. School districts continue to tell the governor and his agencies, we don't agree with you. We're going to do this our way to protect kids. We're going to continue following this, but it has been remarkable to watch this play out.
Yes, and, you know, the lesson here for kids and for school kids, as always, when we talk about this, everything related to public education in this area, is do not listen to the adults. Do not listen to your established authority. Your teachers are nice people, but they're not in control. Your principals are nice people, but they're not in control. Your parents are nice people, but they're not in control. The people that are in control are nice people, but they're not in control. This is just more silly, petty bickering in the middle of a pandemic. You know, the numbers are continuing to tick up. We are inching ever closer to a million. Will we have a million dead from COVID by Christmas? The way some politicians in this country are going, it seems very likely. I can understand the cynicism and the fear that a lot of people out there and a lot of conservatives out there may feel. You know, I don't necessarily trust the government either. But, I mean, at this point, it's just kind of dumb. It's kind of dehumanizing for all of us that we even have to, like, talk about it and think about it and, you know, and treat these people like they're not lunatics that are putting everyone's lives at risk. You know, I have two sisters that are teachers. I have a mom that's a guidance counselor. I have five nieces and nephews in the schools. I have dozens and dozens of friends that are teachers. And, you know, it's just very sad. It's a real tragedy. You know, happy hour is only 7 hours away, though, so we'll be okay.
Oh, well, I hate to add to the bad news, but the Jaguars, you might have noticed, lost again last night to the Bengals. Final score, 24-21. That makes it 19 straight regular season losses for the team. We're edging into Detroit Lions territory, guys. Also this weekend, the Donna Foundation kicks off Breast Cancer Awareness Month with the return to in-person races. The Players Donna 5K is coming up tomorrow at the Players Stadium course at TPC Sawgrass. It's the first event in the Donna 2021-22 Fearless Series. Here's founder Donna Deegan.
We are so excited at the Donna Foundation this week to kick off Breast Cancer Awareness Month with the Players Donna 5K presented by Nimnik Family of Dealerships. It is our first in-person event since February of 2020, and we could not be more excited about it. The theme for this year is together. We're celebrating how gathering in community fosters strength and support in overcoming breast cancer. And again, this is our first in-person race since February of 2020, so together is definitely something that resonates with all of us. All events of the Donna Foundation support our signature programs, our critical programs that help families living with breast cancer. Last year, through our Donna Care Line, we served 40% more patients than we did in the prior year. These are patients that are having to choose between putting food on the table and getting the much-needed treatment for their breast cancer. At the end of the day, when you come out and you run with us and support the Donna Foundation, you truly are helping families today and families in the future.
Okay, so that's Saturday. Also Saturday, thousands of activists will gather across the state and the nation to march for reproductive freedom. They will gather at the Duval County Courthouse and talk about their support of Roe versus Wade, which is seen as being under threat. Also Saturday, there will be a Bans Off Our Bodies march. This will happen in St. Augustine. It has special resonance because of the issues in St. John's County schools, where yearbook photos of girls have been altered. Keep your eye on this on Saturday. And let's do a quick lightning round. Let's talk about SpaceX. Did you hear the sonic boom last night, Tim Gibbons? It scared the crap out of everybody as SpaceX came back to orbit. That's my contribution. Tim.
Actually, I'm going to piggyback on that. So on that capsule were some experiments from the local space company, Redwire, which is a conglomeration of space things, which is just kind of a sign of how that segment of the economy is growing in Jacksonville, and I think it's pretty cool.
And I'm so sorry, AG and Sheldon, I talked too much. We're out of time to give your contributions. I'm sorry, guys. That's on me. AG Gankarski, Sheldon Hall, Tim Gibbons, and Dan Scanlon, thank you so much for being with us, and have a great weekend. In a moment, how you can drive electric at a special JEA event Saturday. That's next.
On the next Fresh Air, our interview with Melvin Van Peebles, one of the first black feature filmmakers and a trailblazer in American independent film. He died last week. Also, our interview with John Shelby Spong, the former Episcopal Bishop of New Jersey, who died this month. He was one of the first to ordain a woman and a gay man into the clergy. Join us.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
The U.S. government is about to run out of money. That's problem one. Problem two, Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and whether they're ready to make a deal.
You tell me what you want. This is what I want. They have talked in vague terms, but we haven't seen the specifics that we need.
Lots of moving parts this week, and we'll have the very latest on the Friday News Roundup. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Come out and test drive the newest electric cars and bikes tomorrow at the Mosh, part of JEA's first ever Drive Electric event. I spoke with JEA Electrification Manager Dave McKee.
Hi, Dave. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's nice to be here.
It's exciting to talk to you about this, your first ever Drive Electric event, so that people can learn more about electric vehicles. Now, this is coming up at the Mosh as part of National Drive Electric Week. Tell us what we'll be able to check out and learn.
It's going to be a great event, Melissa. We've got so much energy building around this. It seems like it's just growing every day. The highlight, of course, will be some beautiful electric vehicles that are on display, not only for looking at them, but also for ride and drives. So if you have been thinking about an electric vehicle, or if you're just interested in what the new ones look like and the features, it's a great time to come out and give them a whirl. We'll have that. We'll have various modes of electric transportation. Mm. We'll have JEA electrified fleet vehicles, some that you've probably never seen before. We'll have static displays from electric bicycle vendors. We have a manufacturer of three-wheeled electric vehicles that will be here, and they create so much excitement. It's just going to be a riot to see people ride them.
That does sound fun.
Look at them.
Yeah, it's fun to try out electric bikes, and of course, trying out the cars will be fun. JTA will have its fully autonomous electric vehicle there as well. And then, Dave, this is really a way to encourage people to check out a hybrid or all-electric vehicle because, of course, that's the way our economy, our society is moving.
Yes, absolutely. Electrified transportation is the future. That's what's going to become more and more common as electrified vehicles replace fossil fuel vehicles. So the options are just going to continue to increase as time goes on. And JEA is, wouldn't surprise anyone, is very interested in promoting clean electric transportation and anything that we can do to, increase the quality of lives of the people that live here in Jacksonville is something that we're definitely wanting to support.
And tell us a little bit more about that, because, of course, major utilities are trying to reduce emissions where they can. It's complicated, though. It's not going to happen overnight. So within JEA, how are you addressing that? What conversations are you having when you look at your energy mix?
Yeah, great question, Melissa. First, I'll just point out that there's a tremendous gain in efficiency and a reduction in emissions when you go from fossil fuel burning of the individual point sources of individual vehicles. When you reduce those and you replace them with electric fuel that's supplied by a central generator, that's a step change in efficiency that results in a significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. So those vehicles produce less, and they also contribute less towards local air pollution problems like asthma and things associated with ozone. So there's that's going on, and then you have JEA's ongoing efforts to reduce the emissions of our generator fleet. So over time, as we clean up our generators and they continue to increase in efficiency and we see those gains, we actually have a dual track of greenhouse gas emissions.
How does that process track with calls to do a rapid drawdown of emissions? Climate scientists saying we only have about a decade left to really make a meaningful impact. How can utilities be part of that? And how do you see your responsibility there? And what are the biggest challenges?
Well, what we're talking about doing right here, electrification, has been identified by top scientists, climate scientists, have identified electrification as one of the primary channels for reducing carbon in the atmosphere. So this mechanism of replacing fossil fuel burning equipment with electric equipment and then cleaning up the generation of the electric generators, that process is exactly what has been prescribed. So, that's why JEA is interested.
And with all of that said, you want people to come on out Saturday, October 2nd from 2 to 5 p.m. to the MOSH, the Museum of Science and History. The first 100 people out, I think, get a coupon for admission to the museum and maybe some other fun prizes. And then, of course, as you mentioned, they'll get to test drive the cars and the bikes.
That's exactly right, Melissa.
Check it out, everybody, for National Drive Electric Week. I think I'm going to stop by. This is really interesting. I'd like to get an electric vehicle soon. So thank you so much, JEA Electrification Manager Dave McKee. Again, that's Saturday, October 2nd, 2 p.m. at the MOSH. Come on out and drive electric. More info at jeadriveelectric.com.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers and senior producer Heather Schatz. Brady Corum directing today. Catherine Hobbs is our associate producer. Jessica Palumbo is our editorial director. Make sure to join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup. It's our live statewide call-in show, rounding up the biggest stories of the week all across the Sunshine State. That's today at noon. And you can catch the podcast of this show later today on all platforms, including the WJCT app. Download that today. I'm Melissa Ross. Be safe, everyone. Have a great fall weekend. Get out and enjoy yourself safely. Talk to you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.